Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Canto 6, Chapter 9, The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura, this morning's text number 34. You need no support, and although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us. Since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed, you create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. Nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activities, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Brahma Samhita 537 says, Goloka eva nivasati akilatma bhutaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is always situated in Goloka Vrindavan. It is also said, Vrindavanam purit yajja padam ekam nagachati. Krishna never goes even a step from Vrindavan. Nevertheless, although Krishna is situated in his own abode, Goloka Vrindavan, he is simultaneously all-pervading and is therefore present everywhere. This is very difficult for a conditioned soul to understand, but devotees can understand how Krishna, without undergoing any changes, can simultaneously be in his abode and be all-pervasive. The demigods are understood to be various limbs of the Supreme Lord's body. Although the Supreme Lord has no material body and does not need anyone's help, he is spread everywhere. Mayam tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. Nevertheless, he is not present everywhere in his spiritual form. According to the Mayavada philosophy, the Supreme Truth, being all-pervasive, does not need a transcendental form. The Mayavadis suppose that since his form is distributed everywhere, he has no form. This is untrue. The Lord keeps his transcendental form, and at the same time, he extends everywhere in every nook and corner of the material creation. So again, the demigods are praying to Krishna. They say, O Lord, you need no support, and although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us. Since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed, you create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. Nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activities, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. Yes. How does he create this material world? The material world, Sagunam, has all the three modes of material nature, but Krishna is Agunaha. He's transcendental to this material nature. He says, here the demigods say, Asharanaha, you have no support yourself. Ashariraha, you have no material body. You don't depend upon us for anything. And yet, you, without being transformed, create this whole world. Atmana, by yourself, out of your own self. This is also stated in the Vedanta Sutra, Atma Krite Parinamat, it says, that it establishes that the cause of everything is Brahman. And how does Brahman create? Atma Krite. He creates out of his own self. How does he do this? Parinamat, by means of Parinamat. He transforms himself. This is called Parinama Vada. The word Vada means teaching. There's like Maya Vada, Shunya Vada, Vada. From the word Vad, which means to speak. So Vada is a teaching or a doctrine. So the philosophy of the Vedas is Parinama Vada, the doctrine of the teaching that the world is an emanation from Brahman. Atma Krite Parinamat, on the authority there of Srila Vyasadeva in the Vedanta Sutra. And here also, same thing is said. He creates the world out of himself, without anyone else's assistance, although he has no material body, although he has no support, although he doesn't need any demigods, everything works. So, how is this done? That's hard to understand. And in fact, the Mayavadis can't understand. The devotee can understand, but not the impersonalist. So actually they, impersonalists, cleverly, or maybe over-cleverly, go on to reject the teaching of Parinamavada, in spite of Vyasadeva's own statement. That's why when speaking to the sannyasis at Banaras, Varanasi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to them, this is in Adi Lila chapter 7, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to them that Shankaracharya has suggested that Vyasadeva is wrong. Because Vyasadeva says very clearly, it's in the sutra, Atma Krite Parinamat. But in the purport, not to that text, the commentary, not to that text, but to another one, a little later on, Shankaracharya argues that Parinama Vada is wrong. His argument is that if Brahman actually produced out of was the cause of the material world, as stated, then he would be transformed. But there are so many texts that says that Brahma does not change. He mentions specifically the word kutashta, which also appears in Bhagavad Gita. Kutashta, unchanged. Therefore, he says, the actual fact is that all effects, or what seem to be the effects of Brahman, that is to say, the material world, Srijasi Pasi Harasi, it seems that he creates, maintains, and annihilates, he says they're illusory. Which means they're not effects. Which means that Brahman does not create the world. And so how do we explain the existence of an apparent phenomenal world? Shankaracharya says, Vivarta. It's an illusion. Vivarta means illusion. And that's the Mayavad doctrine, Vivartavada. So there's two teachings. The Vedic teaches Parinamavada. The Mayavadis actually reject this in favor of Vivartavada. Now, of course, they can't deny that the sutra says Parinamata. So they say, Shankaracharya says, that there's actually two ways of speaking about Brahman. If you want to know the sand, he uses a couple of technical terms to describe these two ways. Can you hear in the kitchen all right? Okay. One Sanskrit term is Vyavahara. V-Y-A-V-A-H-A-long-A-R-A. Vyavahara. That means conventional, ordinary. And the other way he calls Paramartha. The real reality. Artha meaning, you know, Paramartha, highest reality. Paramartha. Two ways of discussion. One is conventional and one is in reality. So these are two words Shankara uses. I saw that in that reinitiation paper that the GBC produced, I believe there's a quotation there from Jiva Goswami where he talks about two kinds of gurus, Vyavahara guru and a Paramartha guru. So the Vyavahara guru is the guru that's your family priest that, you know, performs a ritual when you're 12 years old and gives you initiation. That's the conventional, also called Kula guru. You know this term, Kula guru?
Kula?
Kula. Yeah, Kula means your family. Kula guru. So as a matter of convention, all boys, you know, it's like a bar mitzvah or something, you know, when you're 11 or 12 years old, you get a Brahmin. So if you're from that, from the twice born group, you get initiated, it gives you a mantra and a thread, and that's Kula guru, or Vyavahara guru. And then there's Paramartha guru, the real guru, qualified spiritual master who can actually give transcendental knowledge and free one from birth and death. So these two terms are also used by... Anyway, so Shankaracharya used these terms, Vyavahara and Paramartha, two kinds of language. So conventional speech, he says, sometimes Brahman is spoken of from the point of view of nescience or ignorance. And he says, in that case, Brahman is spoken of as a person who creates the world, maintains it, and annihilates it. But there's a higher truth, he says, where sometimes we're speaking in this higher way, where Brahman is understood to be devoid of name, form, qualities, and activities and relationships. This is the Paramartha speech. When Brahman is not an object of ignorance or nescience, he says, but an object of knowledge. So this is his way of trying to deal with the statements that say things like Atmakrite Parinamat. He says, oh, well, that's a conventional proposition from the point of view of ignorance. But then he says, but from the point of view of reality, we have to say that actually what he says is that Brahman is not the cause of the world. What is the cause of the world? It doesn't have any cause. Where have we heard that before? What does it say about the demons in Bhagavad Gita? They say asatyam, apratishtam, and what else?
Jagadahurishwara.
Yeah. Asatyam apratishtam means it has no asatyam, it is unreal. Apratishtam, it has no foundation or support. Jagat, the world. Ahur, they say. Anishwaram, it has no controller. And that's exactly what Shankaracharya ends up saying. That's exactly what he ends up saying. As do the modern atheists. But there's this color of religion cast over the thing. in Shankaracharya's teachings like this. So it's difficult to understand. So you see that, of course, Shankaracharya, it wasn't that he didn't understand. But for those people who don't want to understand, who are intent in avoiding Krishna, he gives them the facility. Because that's what it allows you to do, Shankaracharya's Mayavadi system, of trying to be spiritual and avoid surrender to Krishna. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes on to say that this argument of Shankaracharya denying Parinama Vada is erroneous because his idea that if Krishna emanated, the world emanated from Krishna, then Krishna would be transformed is false. It doesn't follow. First of all, Isha Upanishad tells us that he's so complete and perfect that even though so many universes come from him, he remains full. He is not diminished. So he can emanate to us. The sun shines every day and there's no perceptible diminution because it's so powerful. So you get something as vastly powerful as the sun, it can go on for millions of years and you'll never see any lessening of its power. So imagine something that's infinitely full. Well, he can go on producing forever and never be diminished. This is the way infinities work anyway, or infinite sets. So that's no problem. But the other thing is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that Parinama Vada has to be understood as Shakti Parinama Vada. Shakti means energies. So that when the world is created, maintained, and annihilated, it goes through those three stages of transformation where it looks like something comes out of Krishna, goes through all kinds of changes, and then comes back in again. Krishna is not transformed, but his Shakti is transformed. His energy. So it's Shakti Parinama Vada. So always there's a distinction. Even during the pralaya or during the devastation, when it seems that there's nothing but Krishna, actually Krishna's energy exists in a very fine and subtle form, where all the and it never quite becomes identical with Krishna. In this case, we're talking about Mahavishnu. So is this energy, the Shakti, which working automatically produces, maintains, and winds up, keeps going on and on and on and again. The Lord remains unchanged, and his energy goes through the transformations. This is how it takes place. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the actual truth of the matter is if you can accept Shakti, you can accept Parinama Vada with the understanding that it's Shakti Parinama Vada. And in a sense, that energy is Krishna because there's nothing but Krishna. His energies remain inseparable from him. And yet at the same time, Krishna is not present there. This cannot be understood except by the practice of devotional service. It cannot be grasped. like this. Krishna is everything, but everything is not Krishna. That's why I just read a letter Prabhupada said like that. I collect these little places where Prabhupada states in Chinchibeda Beda Tattva, like koan, like little koans, you know. Like nothing is different from Krishna. Krishna is different from everything. And that he says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, last purport. I changed the grammar, I changed around a little bit for. Then in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adi Lila, he says, there's nothing but Sri Krishna, yet nothing is Sri Krishna, save and except his own primeval personality. And then in a letter, early letter, he says, Krishna is everything, but everything is not Krishna. So these are the statements of Achincha Beda Beda Tattva. If we don't see both the distinction and the non-distinction, then that's actually a symptom of spiritual disease. But this is the correct understanding, so that we engage in Krishna's service. If you see just everything is Krishna, then it could be the case. Then you'll end up like the Mayavadis. You can worship yourself as God. You can worship anything as God. Like Ramakrishna put his wife on the altar. And people do. They take a clod of earth, whatever. Because it's all one. You can do like that. If one becomes a pantheist or a nature worshipper, nature is God. So far as the Mayavadis are concerned, they think the supreme form of Krishna is the universal form, but thinks that therefore he has no transcendental form, that there's the universal form and then higher than that is the impersonal Brahman. And that the universal form is only something that we focus on as long as we're in illusion. When we come to paramartha, or reality, all that will vanish. And in fact, I will attain pure knowledge in which there's no distinction between the knower, absolutely no distinction, the knower, the thing known, and the act of knowing. It all merges into one single entity. Then, of course, that cannot be described as knowledge at all. I don't know why they want to give it the word vidya. It doesn't deserve it. Whatever it is, it's not vidya. The fact is, of course, in the spiritual world, there's a different kind of knowledge. Here, the knower is spiritual, and what he knows is material. But in the spiritual world, the knower and that which he knows are of the same transcendental quality. So there is quite a difference in the spiritual world, but there's still a distinction in spite of the oneness of knower, thing known, and act of knowledge, that all are Brahman. So there's oneness, but there's also the distinction never collapses, that the knower and the thing known become one, which is another way of saying, tactfully, that I become God, which is serpent in the nest there in Mayavad philosophy, desire to become the supreme, to somehow or other escape this condition of being the servant or having a master. It's another tactic to avoid devotional service. So we have to accept Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. Then we can understand reality. If we deny that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, if that's our mindset from the very beginning, and our choices are different ways of trying to figure out ways to deny it, then we'll never understand what the reality is, because we don't want to see it. I think they call this denial in psychology. People are in a state of denial. Just like sometimes it happens that a person can become an alcoholic and deny it, not actually see the symptoms. And the relatives will also deny it. Well, there's a little drinking problem. Until finally, you know, the fact of opening every time you open a drawer or a cabinet, somebody finds a half-full whiskey bottle distributed all over the house, then finally the evidence becomes overwhelming and maybe somebody accepts it. But often people, when there's something going on that we don't want to deal with, in reality, go into this thing called denial. And there's a lot of anxiety because on one level you recognize it, but you suppress your knowledge. So in material existence also there's anxiety because there's a huge amount of denial. And what's being denied is the fact that we are servants and subordinate. And therefore we create a false world. So there's, in a sense, when this material world is everyone who's trying to be a perverse enjoyer in this material world is seeing an illusory world. That is a world in which he's the enjoyer and the controller. These things are false. And a world in which he can eventually succeed in his aims. And similarly, the Mayavadi, he creates another kind of false world, an illusory world, where also the possibility is there that he becomes God and takes that position. So all these are illusory creations of the jiva who's denying his position as servant of Krishna. So the demigods at least appreciate Krishna's position, even though he said it's difficult to understand. But if one becomes a devotee, then easy to understand. Vedeshu dulabham madulabham atma bhakto. Easy to understand by atma bhakto, atma bhakta, by pure devotion of the soul, says in Brahma Samhita. Okay, any questions? Dhiro Datta Prabhu?
As you're describing Shankaracharya's method of twisting Vyasadeva's philosophy in Vedanta Sutra, it seems like he's playing quite a game with the Vedanta Sutra. By on the one hand, he's using the Vedanta Sutra as the authority or the paramartha statement. But then when he comes to something he doesn't like, and he says, well, this is, he's just talking ordinary here. So yeah. He just plays with it according to what he wants to do.
That's right. It's very, very clever way to do things. If you say there's two different realms of discourse, then you can say, well, here it's this and there it's that. And you can... This is what Lord Chaitanya talks about when he says the method of indirect interpretation. A direct statement there of meaning, atma kute parinamat, you're able to actually deny and find some other meaning to it by this method of textual interpretation. And it puts a real strain on the text, and you have to get very complicated and convoluted and so on. And it creates problems that right off the bat make it very implausible. Most of us don't know Vedanta Sutra, but we know the first two sutras, right? Atato Brahma Gignasa, which means now you should inquire into Brahman. It means that, and in the commentaries, all commentators, including Shankaracharya, says, why are we enjoined to inquire to Brahman? He says, because knowledge of Brahman brings release from birth and death in this material world. That's why we should inquire to Brahman. Next purport, next one, Janmadasi Yataha, defines Brahman. Presumably, that Brahman, the knowledge of which brings release from birth and death in the material world, the Brahman we're supposed to inquire into in the previous slokas. But according to Shankaracharya's philosophy, as it develops throughout the commentary, Janmadasi Yataha does not describe the highest Brahman, which is an object of knowledge and which brings release from the material world. It describes that Brahman which is an object of ignorance, and which, understanding that, will only attain a pious birth in the higher regions, but we won't get loose until we understand the Paramartha Brahman. So Janmadasi Yataha, Brahman is that from which everything is created, maintained, and destroyed. That's the Vyavahara description, the conventional nescience description. So why does that description given? If Brahman is being defined as what we need to understand to become free from birth and death in this material world. So you see right off the bat, it's incoherent. See, so just knowing, even if we just know the first two shlokas, we can see what Shankaracharya's interpretation does to the text. And Mayavadis, if you look at Mayavadi literature, when they define Brahman, they never, ever say Janmadasi Yataha, even though that's, you know, right there in the pride of first place in Vedanta Sutra. They say, you know, Ekatvam, Anantam, Satyam, and so on. One without a second, eternal, full of knowledge, bliss. But they never say Janmadasi Yataha. Never. Because it blows their whole their whole effort. Yeah. This translation again? O Lord, you need no support. And although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us. Since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed, you create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. Nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activity, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. Okay.
Prabhupada said that seeing Krishna's energies, immediately one has to remember Krishna's transcendental form through his energies, because how can his energy act independently of Krishna? Mm-hmm. Then I was thinking, is it that my bodies, they only take Brahma or Krishna as absolute truth, but they don't accept his energies or see Krishna behind his spiritual energies?
That's right. That's their position. They reject the energies. They say it's just Maya.
But you also cannot see Krishna behind his energy.
No. No. Or if they want to see, what they see behind the energies is at most a universal form, which is a kind of imaginary Krishna. What is it? They worship, what does Prabhupada call it? Philosophized Vishnu? Mayavadis worship five gods, this Panchopasana set up by Shankaracharya system. So they worship Surya, Devi, Shiva, Ganesh, and Prabhupada Vishnu. What Prabhupada calls it, philosophized Vishnu. So when they see Krishna, they imagine that what they're seeing is still something material. So they ultimately, they, as Shankaracharya's, if you ask in Shankaracharya's philosophy, what is the relationship between Brahman, that is to say, Paramarthika Brahman, I mean the high Brahman, and the world? The answer is there is no relationship. Because there is no world, sort of. He actually says it cannot be described either as existing or as not existing.
That's called monism.
Monism.
Therefore, Krishna must only receive every step in spiritual energy, but on the modes of the illusory energy, you cannot see.
Yeah, that blocks him out. That's right. You can start to see him in the mode of goodness. You can start to get a glimmer. But you have to go beyond the mode of goodness to actually see Krishna.
So there's two schools of thought that you're bringing up about conventional understanding.
No, those aren't two schools of thought.
There's two ways of thinking.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
So, have the reality philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So, more or less, if we are real in this material existence, it's more or less like a dream world of the Maya, that we're an illusion of thinking that we're particular mm-hmm. characters, particular bodies, or we're particular mm-hmm. persons. So, the reality of it is to understand that we're connected with Krishna, it's part of parcels, we're his servants.
Yeah. You see, that's not what Shankara says about these two points of view. Okay, what he says is that when you think that here's this world and it comes from God and we're all servants of God, that's conventional. And the Paramartha view is there's Brahman alone and nothing else exists aside from that one undifferentiated Brahman. That's his position.
Alright, so he's in a position of authority now. He was acting as a guru, acharya, mm-hmm. during that time age.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'm wondering is, who does it say what is reality and who is, what isn't mm-hmm. reality?
Yeah.
We're all lost in this world of illusion. Mm-hmm. We're all covered over certain degrees of illusion. Who is to really say?
Yeah, that's right. That's where you have this parampara system.
Then we have Lord Buddha coming and changing the whole system around.
Yeah, they screwed it up.
So it's very confusing.
Mm-hmm. So, but we understand. We have to understand what their purposes were. You know, I mean, Shankaracharya started with Buddha and went to Shankaracharya for restoration of Vedic culture. So Shankaracharya is kind of a halfway step that takes Buddhists at least back to accepting the authority of the Vedas. Buddha, he completely rejected Vedic authority. After Buddhism became powerful in India under Emperor Ashoka, Vedas and Brahmins fell into disrepute. So what Shankaracharya did was he again restored the Brahminical, he presented the Mayavad philosophy, therefore convincing people who were Buddhists to at least accept the authority of the Vedas. Because it's very much the same. If in Buddha you say the supreme is shunya, emptiness, and if you say, no, the supreme is Brahman with no qualities, names, forms, relationships, or activities, then there's a very easy transition. The difference is only a difference of name. So they would accept, but they accepted the authority of the Vedas. And he also restored the Brahminical community. He set down the system in India that's called Smarta Brahman, was invented by Shankaracharya.
He
must have
really transformed India.
Yeah, he very much did. That's right. And it's because of his teachings that the Buddhist influence diminished and they left. They took refuge on, you know, in Tibet and Ceylon and places like that, but they left India. So that paved the way for further acharyas to actually come and restore the Vedic teaching, Ramanuja, Madhva, ultimately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Well, it's a little complicated and confusing, but that's life. What can we say? Anyway, sometimes, you know, Krishna had to take these kind of partial measures. Because there's lots of people. They're in all kinds of different places. And so he has to preach to them in different ways. That's not a license for us to concoct, because the way we're supposed to preach for our time, place, and circumstance has also been handed down by Krishna, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We have our particular goal. Now it's time to bring them further. Prabhupada's mission is to destroy the Nirvishesha and Shunyavada philosophies. The only thing that's finally powerful enough to do it, to put the, you know, coup de grace to it, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. So that's our business. Just like Chaitanya himself showed. He preached to the Mayavadis at Benares. He converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Big Mayavadi. Very great scholar. So he did that. So that's also our mission. Almost everyone who's become a devotee has become a devotee because they become convinced that Mayavada philosophy is wrong, because almost everyone before they become devotees have been Mayavadis of some form or another. Not everyone, but it's usually pretty common. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.